Hello, everyone. Welcome to our audio briefing on international online education programs. My name is Bill Ferreira. I'm a partner in the education practice of Hogan Levels, and I'm pleased to be joined by my colleagues Greg Fehrenbach, Steve Robinson, and Sherry Gong. First and most importantly, we send our good wishes to everyone listening. And we hope you and your families are safe and as healthy as possible in these challenging times. These are interesting times to be a lawyer in the education sector. It seems every day a new and challenging issue emerges. The question of whether and how to reopen this fall is keeping many university committees busy, including the Office of General Counsel. And as leadership has been thinking about various ways and strategies to serve domestic students, the topic of international students naturally arises. Foreign students are, of course, a critical part of the university community for many reasons. But there is a growing recognition that many of these students just will not make it to campus for the beginning of the academic year. Some of these students may be newly admitted students who will just not have U.S. visas in time to be on campus. Others may be continuing students who went home to their home countries and now cannot return due to travel restrictions or guidance to remain at home. Others may be international students who are still in the U.S. and perhaps they're here for safety reasons, but some plan to return to their home countries before the fall term begins. These may be both undergraduate and graduate students, all involved in many different types of degrees and courses. And some of the graduate students perform academic services for the university, such as grading papers or serving as a TA and so on. And they expect stipends for that type of service. And all of this will be done remotely for the next several months. So efforts are underway to make the courseware and instruction available online to international students, either through synchronous or asynchronous programming, perhaps blended with traditional face-to-face instruction wherever possible. But by and large, these students would participate online from their home countries for at least a portion or perhaps the entire upcoming academic term, and perhaps for at least part of the 2021 calendar year as well. So with these efforts to transition online internationally comes a regulatory question, and that question pertains to whether and to what extent the foreign country is hospitable to the school's purveyance of online education courseware and instruction into the foreign country. We want to focus on that question today. And that's a tricky question to answer. It's tricky in part because of the country-to-country variation in the regulatory regime. We all know that higher education in the U.S. is a highly regulated industry. Well, so too outside the United States, but outside the U.S., higher education can be highly political. It's often controlled at a central government level, and it can be painfully bureaucratic. So you may be stepping into an environment that is quite complex and should be navigated carefully. And the issues outside the U.S. go well beyond education regulation. Online programs offered abroad would involve foreign tax issues, consumer protection issues, privacy issues, funds transfer issues, internet connectivity issues, among many other issues. So I'll start by offering a quick sampling of foreign education regulatory issues and tax issues, and then I'll invite Greg to cover some additional U.S. and foreign regulatory issues. We'll then hand it over to Steve and to Sherry from our Beijing office to take the last segment to focus on online education into China. Of course, we're addressing all of this at a very high level only, and some of these observations will change depending on the specific facts of any program. Let's start by making a distinction between temporary online courses that are made available abroad due to the COVID crisis versus full online degree programs that are designed and intended to be available abroad as full degrees. The distinction is important because full degree programs often do encounter additional foreign regulatory barriers regarding marketing and advertising and student admissions and accreditation and more. Greg will add some more color to the full degree program scenario. Depending on the country, there may also be some flexibility available to temporary programming as opposed to a full degree program. So that distinction is important. For any type of online program provided to students abroad, a threshold question is, where exactly is the student sitting or resident while engaged in the program? And do you have a good handle on that? Students resident in Cuba or Iran or Syria or other OFAC-sanctioned embargoed countries, they would deserve special attention. And the question of whether online programming can be provided to them would be a country-by-country analysis based on the licenses available. And the relevant factors there may include whether the online program is an undergraduate or graduate program, a STEM versus non-STEM course, and whether the student is in a third country while engaged in the program. So some screening of students is important here. In terms of foreign education regulation of a university's online programming into that country, we've looked at dozens of countries over the past few weeks. There is some ambiguity because the distance education delivery model is not consistently contemplated or addressed from location to location. And it's a novel concept in many places. So there's a bit of a square peg and a round hole issue at times because traditional face-to-face education regulation can be overlaid on the virtual model, and the result may be different from province to province or city to city in any particular country, depending on how education is regulated there. The primary question at first is usually whether regulatory approval or authorization is needed to provide online courses to students located in that country. And in many jurisdictions where the courses are hosted on U.S. websites and the U.S. institution is not seeking any form of institutional accreditation or degree recognition in the foreign location, and the U.S. institution has no office or location in the foreign country, there may not be any specific prior approval requirement to provide temporary online courseware, especially as a bridge mechanism while the U.S. school may be closed. Some countries have come out and said as much. But even where that flexibility exists, it does not necessarily mean that an academic credential awarded through a degree program that involves an online distance learning component will be recognized in that foreign country. Many jurisdictions just do not grant recognition of degrees or diplomas or certificates that are earned online through a partial or even a full online mechanism. Or they may require the school to go through certain steps for the degree to be eligible for recognition. And that can be a significant issue. It can be an issue for students if they need such degree recognition in order to work in their home countries. And it's also a disclosure issue for the school in terms of how to advise the student about degree validity and recognition. There do remain some jurisdictions that will require prior approval and authorization for a school to provide online programming there as part of a degree program, and they regulate this area. There's often an application and a permitting process there, and going through that approval process isn't always realistic in the short term, but it may be important groundwork for the longer term. So overall, it is important to do some education regulatory diligence before jumping into the online sector in any of these countries, and Greg will add some more information to this in a minute here. I'll transition briefly to foreign tax issues associated with international online programs. Tax merits a much more in-depth and fact-specific discussion than we'll have time for. But very generally, a foreign tax issue may arise in online programming because services from abroad are being provided to a recipient of those services in the foreign country. The recipient, there's a financial transaction there. The student is paying for the service, whether we consider these electronic services or digital services or something else. And even if all the services are provided from outside the foreign country, tax may still be levied given the location of the receipt of the services. So this may be in the form of a VAT tax or a digital services tax or something similar. For example, India just announced a new 2% tax on foreign providers of digital services to Indian residents. So this can get complicated. It can get complicated quickly as you think about breaking down tuition between the online foreign component versus non-online or non-foreign components. And the tax filing and payment for something like this is obviously a logistical challenge, but there are ways to address it with a country-by-country strategy. If the institution had a website or servers or an office or employees in the foreign country, then there is a tax permanent establishment issue to tackle as well. We'll not dive into the PE issue, but any online programming should be reviewed with a view to the school's existing footprint in that foreign country. A quick word on international graduate students. Many of the students will be sitting abroad this fall and participating in online courses. We wouldn't typically consider these students to be like employees, but they do often receive stipends, and that can be viewed by regulators as tied to academic services, such as being a TA or grading papers or doing research. So you may be thinking about how we're going to deliver these stipends without triggering a foreign employment or tax liability, either for the student or for the school. Again, that's a country-by-country analysis, but in general, there should be ways to handle this such that the university doesn't have a tax or a labor obligation abroad, but there still may be some unavoidable personal tax filings and obligations for the student in their home countries if they receive these stipends. You might also want to check foreign exchange control regulations, which are making it a bit difficult in some countries to actually physically deliver these payments to students sitting abroad. So, Greg, let me invite you to pick it up from here and cover some additional foreign regulatory considerations.
Thank you, Bill, and thank you for joining us today. I wanted to highlight four or five of the issues that come up most frequently in our practice in connection with 100% online programs offered abroad, and then turn it over to my colleagues in China to provide a sort of case study of the things that Bill and I have been talking about. The first question that we usually get from clients is, do I need to be authorized to offer this program in a particular country? And that's a good question because, of course, it is country by country or even provincial, as in the case of some countries like Canada. The good news is that our research indicates that as a general rule, no authorization or permitting is required if it's a 100% online program. But that is not true in all countries, and so you still need to do some homework. It's also not true if you establish a physical presence in another country, and which has all kinds of consequences like tax, as Bill mentioned. Another issue that comes up frequently has to do with offering full degrees abroad. And I would say that the hot area right now is actually non-degree programs, which are particularly in English business language programs, are very popular abroad. And many of the same issues that we're discussing here apply to those non-degree programs. But with degree programs, as Bill mentioned, there's a couple of particular issues to bear in mind. And the first one, and really the most important one, is that not all countries will recognize an online degree from a foreign institution. And this can be important if your students later want to apply for work in certain fields like government or academia, where that recognition is important. And it therefore puts a premium on doing that research and providing proper disclosure in enrollment agreements and on your website. Because most countries do have laws similar to ours that mandate proper disclosure, honest disclosure to potential students to protect their citizens. A third issue that comes up frequently is data security and privacy. U.S. law, as many know, is a lot more lax than the law of many other countries of the world. The monetization of personal information is kind of an accepted business model in many large U.S. companies, but it is not so around the world. And most schools, I think, now are aware of the GDPR regime and the potential fines associated with violating European privacy law, which also applies in the UK. And GDPR is becoming a bit of the template around the world rather than the US model. So we see, for example, India has adopted strict privacy laws. So you need to be careful about how you market and what you do with the information that you collect from students. An issue that's coming up commonly in the last few weeks has to do with partnerships with foreign institutions, and in particular, Title IV. And one may ask, what does Title IV have to do with this, with U.S. aid? Well, a great many foreign institutions are Title IV eligible, but there's a quirk in the Department of Education's Title IV rules, going back really to the bias that the Department of Education has historically had against online programs as a potential source of abuse, that foreign institutions cannot provide online programs, even if they're Title IV eligible, to U.S. students. And so what we've seen in the COVID crisis is an issue there where you have year abroad programs where a foreign institution, even if it's a Title IV eligible foreign institution, can't offer online programs to U.S. residents. The Department of Education has stepped in, and in their recent guidance, COVID guidance, they have loosened that up, and they now say you may take an online class with your foreign partner. And they're also looking to loosen it up prospectively as part of the Department of Education's pending rulemaking around innovation and distance education, which is expected to be effective next year. Finally, I just wanted to say a little bit about vendors, because commonly institutions doing business abroad do have a variety of partners, and oftentimes they include OPM companies, but also recruiting companies and others. What I would say here is that you can't outsource compliance. A lot of times your partners, your vendors become agents of you as a technical matter under U.S. or foreign law. For example, a U.S. law, the Foreign Corrupt Practices Act, may apply to the actions of your vendors. And you really need to work closely with them to address the compliance issues on a country-by-country basis. It is not wise to rely on reps and warranties in your contract and indemnifications without doing your own due diligence, because it's your institution that is most often on the hook. And if they're not on the hook as a matter of technical liability or financial responsibility, then they are on the hook in terms of your reputation. So see your vendors and partners as just that, and try to do your diligence and operationalize the compliance risks. With that, let me turn it over to my colleagues from China, Steve and Sherry.
Okay. For a foreign university to offer online courses to Chinese students when they stay in China during the COVID-19 crisis, you will face all issues Bill and Greg discussed just now. First of all, from the regulatory perspective, many universities are concerned if their degree accreditation will be affected because of the online courses. As you may know, if an online degree program is offered purely online, it cannot get the accreditation or recognition in China. But the good news is that the Ministry of Education and the agency delegated by the Ministry of Education for conducting accreditation of foreign-related degrees confirmed that if the universities offer online courses during the COVID-19 period, that's fine. Their degree will not be affected by the online programs. However, the authorities confirmed that this is only a temporary arrangement. After the pandemic is over, the online learning should not be recognized as a routine teaching method in degree-awarding programs. However, unfortunately, we don't know this temporary arrangement will be permitted. So we are waiting to see. Another important issue is the tax issue. As Bill mentioned that, you need to consider the tax implication for the online courses. If the university does not send any personnel agents to China and have no place of business in China, there should no permanent establishment concern However, because the students are located in China, as their service recipients are in China, even all the services for the online courses are provided outside China, VAT, the value added tax, will be imposed. And usually the rate will be around the 6.76%. So it's advisable for the university to break down the tuition for in China and out China portion. Otherwise, the Chinese tax authority may impose the tax on the entire tuition. That's one we should pay attention to. And also, the university is technically the taxpayer under the PRC law. The students are supposed to be withhold the tax. However, in practice, it's not common for the students to do that. So strictly compliance with the China tax obligation is advisable for the universities to consider appointing an agent in China, like their subsidiary in China, or even us, to help for the tax filing and payment obligation. Internet connection and use of VPN in China is really a challenging issue. As you may know, only foreign-related entities, such as Sino-Foreign Joint Ventures, wholly foreign-owned enterprises, and representative offices in China, are permitted to use the VPN to access the international internet for internal working purpose. Strictly speaking, students' personal use of a VPN connection international internet is not permitted in China, even if the enforcement is not very strict in China. In response to the COVID-19, all the three authorized VPN providers, including the China Telecom, China Mobile, and China Unicom, they are now relaxing the restrictions and allow foreign universities to engage authorized VPN services for their users in China. Please note, in China, only the three, China Telecom, China Mobile, and China Unicom, can provide authorized and legal VPN services for international internet connection in China. So if the foreign university want to use the VPN, they should consider contract with the three providers. As an alternative, they can also consider the China-based cloud computing providers, like the AWS Cloud or Ali Cloud, to provide a package solution to address the internet issue, but they all use the VPN services provided by the three Chinese companies. But neither solution is straightforward. For example, AWS requires the foreign universities to cooperate with a Chinese partner, and a Chinese Unicom requires a contract value for no less than US$100,000. So if any university need a connection with the service provider, we are happy to provide an introduction. Another issue to consider is about foreign exchange control. For now, China still implements a foreign exchange control regime and set up an annual quota of US$50,000 for foreign currency conversion by individuals. But generally speaking, for tuition payment, this restriction is not very important, because if it's less than the 50,000, they can be easily making the payment. If it exceeds the quota, with some supporting documentation and run through the authority review, it can also be generally made. Another important issue is about privacy issue. For now, if the universities operate a website outside of China, they are not subject to the PRC privacy law mandatorily. However, we still recommend the universities to consider compliance with the PRC privacy law for best practice purpose. And for your information, the key requirements under the privacy law is, first, you must get consent from the data subjects for collection, use, storage, and the cross-border transfer of their personal data, like the student academic records, financial information, etc. Also, the university will have a reporting obligation when there's a breach. So, Steve, would you like to give more information about China?
Thanks, Sherry. As you can all see, the regulatory regime in China is complex, and traditionally it's been very hard to access overseas websites from within China, but the regulators and the telecoms companies seem to be taking at least a somewhat more flexible approach in allowing entities that don't have a subsidiary in China, that don't have existing infrastructure, to be able to meet the needs of the students for some institutions, the incoming class or the continuing class of Chinese students that may be trapped and unable to return to campus this fall. Is substantial. So coming up with a solution to address their needs during this interim period is important. And we think there are ways to achieve the objectives without substantial investment of infrastructure and entity set up in China. And we're glad to help with that. We've helped several institutions, and we think that the solutions are actually more promising than we had thought when we first started looking into this. So let's turn that over back to Bill.
Great. Thank you, Sherry and Steve. Certainly, China is top of mind for so many schools, and it's a challenging jurisdiction. Other countries we're hearing a lot about over the past several weeks have been India, South Korea, Saudi Arabia, Vietnam, Germany, and others. So with all that in mind, I'll just mention that the firm recently issued an international online education guide. This is what we call the Education Goes International service. The guide addresses online education in 22 countries, including the countries I just mentioned. It includes regulatory and compliance issues for online degree programs into these countries. So it's a handy resource as online education becomes the new way of the world. So if this interests you, please reach out to any of us. So we've provided a lot of information in about 30 minutes there, and certainly we've not touched on many permutations of online programming, whether as part of a cross-border collaborative degree program or as part of a federal grant-funded initiative. We'll save all that for another audiocast, including other factors for consideration, other U.S. education regulatory matters, agreements with OPMs, and information on anti-bribery concerns and so on across both the U.S. and various jurisdictions. With that, let me thank all of you for listening. We hope that was useful, and we'll welcome your feedback. We also send our good wishes to you and your institutions. So thank you, and goodbye for now.